Okay, I think perhaps we should begin. I really am quite overwhelmed by the turnout. Didn't know there were so many sick people around. It's good that you could share in this together. For the record, I need to say that my name is John DeGruchy, and this is a session on the Ministry of Christian Healing. When Maynard and I talked a little bit about the healing service tonight, it seemed a good idea that before we have the healing service, and it will, as you know, be in the context of the Eucharist, we should do a little bit of talking about Christian healing, so that those who participate in the service will, if they don't already have some background, have some understanding of the character and the meaning of Christian healing ministry, and in that way that the service could become more meaningful. But quite apart from that, also I have discovered that there's a tremendous interest within Christian churches, communities, in the subject of healing, and I think that your presence here tonight bears that out. I started as a pastor of a congregation in 1960-61 in Durban in South Africa, and in my first confirmation class there was a girl who had a leg in irons, and at some point in the course of the confirmation class I got talking about the ministry of Jesus, and that led into the whole question of Jesus healing. And I could see that she was looking rather quizzically at me on occasions, because she, I think, was saying to herself, I bet he doesn't believe all that stuff. And eventually I plucked up courage one day and I said to her, would you like to talk about the relevance of what we've been discussing in confirmation class about Jesus as healer in terms of your own handicap? And she said yes, which took me a little aback. I'd hope she'd say no. And so we began to meet quite frequently and talk about healing. Now, I had had no teaching on that when I was studying theology or preparing for the ministry, so I was coming at this cold. And we began to explore together what healing was about, and I was totally an amateur in that area, and still am, until eventually she virtually said, after about three or four sessions, she virtually said, well, are you or are you not going to heal me? And I couldn't duck it any longer, you know, and so we went down into the church, and I said, well, I believe that it's supposed to be done in this kind of way. You kneel, I pray, I put my hands on you, and now look, if it doesn't work, don't blame me, but I mean, we'll do it as the books say we should do it and see what happens. But I mean, don't be too disappointed, you know, it could be that it doesn't work. And I sort of prayed a prayer that went something like this: oh God, we know that you want to heal people. Of course, it may be that you don't want to heal this girl, but it could be that you do want to heal her. And if you really want to heal her, well, would you go ahead and heal her? But and she won't be too disappointed if you don't. Well, it was something like that. Anyway. That night, she came to the youth fellowship without her irons, and became a ballet teacher and a swimmer. Now, I was pretty impressed by that. You know, if it had been in the days of the electronic church, I would have really been on the way. So I then decided I'd go out and heal everybody I could lay my hands on. And there was a guy who I'd been ministering to in hospital who was paralyzed as a result of... What is he?
Bilharzia,
which is a disease you pick up in streams in some parts of South Africa. And I went to him and I told him the story and I said, well, how would you like to walk again and everything else? Lord, heal this guy. And so then, of course, that didn't happen. And ever since then, I have been thinking about the healing ministry and sometimes sharing in it. But I realized at that point in time that the thing is really beyond our understanding and comprehension. And I want to stress that right at the beginning. We're not talking here about some magical formula. We're not talking here about some kind of ritual that has an automatic result because you do it right. But what we are acknowledging is that Jesus' ministry had at its center, amongst other things, but certainly at its center, the ministry of healing. If you read the Gospels, that is quite apparent. If you had to take the healing dimension of Jesus' ministry out of the Gospels, a whole dimension would be missing. And the Gospels just wouldn't hang together in quite the same way as they do. Because for Jesus, healing was just part of his proclamation that God's kingdom, God's reign, God's authority had broken into history in his life and ministry. His healing ministry was the demonstration in action that God is God and that God does restore and make whole. And that is a sign of the kingdom. Just as his parables were teaching about the kingdom, the word, if you like, here was the word enacted, the restoring of people to their fullness again. Now, of course, in Jesus' ministry, not everybody was healed. He must have seen many people who were sick who he didn't heal and didn't try to heal. And we've got some accounts in the Gospels of lack of faith and all kinds of things, why people weren't healed and so on. But the center of Jesus' ministry was pointing to God's kingdom as God working in history to make people whole. It was, if you like, a sign of shalom. Now we use that Hebrew word often today, the word for peace. And we forget sometimes exactly what it means. Shalom is very closely connected with what we mean by salvation. And salvation is very closely connected with what we mean by healing, wholeness, health. There is that resurrection song about Jesus rising with healing in his wings. You know that Easter song? There is this... the word shalom, the word healing, salvation, these all belong together. And it refers to God's seeking to make all things new and to restore them to wholeness again. And so, as I say, again and again in the Gospels we read about Jesus' healing. But then in the Acts of the Apostles, we find that as the early Christian community go out and begin to minister, before they know it, before they even have a theology of healing, before they have a strategy, they are healing. And that story in Acts chapter 3, where they are asked by a beggar for some money, and Peter says, well, I haven't got any, but I'll give you what I have got in the name of Jesus Christ, rise and walk. Immediately one has a sense that not the apostles, but Jesus is alive in the midst of that community, and the healing ministry of Jesus is continuing. It's not Peter healing or John healing, but somehow Jesus is healing again using the instruments of that early Christian community. In other words, the healing ministry of the apostolic community was a sign that Jesus had indeed been raised from the dead. Just as the healing ministry of Jesus was a sign that God is in command, that God rules and reigns, a sign of the kingdom, the healing ministry of that early Christian community was clear testimony that Jesus is alive and active through his Spirit. And so the healing function of that early Christian community is regarded as one of the fundamental ways in which the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, begins to work through the Christian community. All right, let me just pause there for a moment in case there's some questions about that. I'm keeping it brief and fairly simple, and I'm sure that many of you could say a lot of other things about this, but just at that point, are there any comments or questions people might have? Okay, maybe that's just so obvious that now that we've said it, we don't need to discuss it. What about the healing ministry of the church through the centuries? Well, there's always been, in some way or another, a healing ministry of the church. I don't want to go into the whole history of that, but often it has been forgotten and neglected. And sometimes even frowned upon. And there have been various reasons for that, again, which we needn't go into. But if you have any knowledge of, let's say, African Christianity, and that's the one that I probably know best, you will know that from the beginning, healing has been very important within the African church. For the African Christian, if God doesn't heal, then what's he up to? God by definition is the one who heals. And if he is not active and alive in the world and in the community, remaking people, healing them, then he can't possibly be God. And so the idea of Jesus as healer is very important in African Christianity. But it has also become very important in the worldwide Christian community as well, particularly in our time. And there have been several reasons for that. One reason is the awareness that the gospel is concerned about the whole of life and not just about what we call the soul or the spirit. When we talk about salvation, we are talking about the whole of life, God renewing the whole of life in individuals, in relationships, in society, and so on. And that when we talk about salvation, we're not just talking about how to get to heaven. Another reason for this rediscovery of the healing dimension in the gospel, in the life of the church, is the fact that for many people, it's become apparent that there's a very real connection between the interior life, if you like, the spiritual dimension of our existence and our physical life, the sort of psychosomatic thing, that we need to see ourselves whole, that you can't minister to people as though they were divided up into body, mind, and spirit, and that these three things had no relationship to each other. We become aware of that interrelatedness of the human personality. And therefore, when we are ministering to people, we are ministering to people as a whole and not just a part of them. That is very important. So that you find Jesus, when he ministers to people, he can move from forgiving their sins to healing their bodies and back again. And he doesn't sort of draw distinctions. Okay? Your sins are forgiven. Get up and walk. You might say, well, what's the connection between those two things? Jesus doesn't see people sort of split down the middle in terms of spirit and body and so on, but he sees people as a whole. He sees the interrelatedness of the different dimensions within our existence. His whole ministry of salvation is to make people whole. Now, there are two extremes that I think we have to avoid and be careful of. The one extreme, when we're talking about Christian healing, is to say, we must put all our money on faith healing, and that the doctors are all wrong. They've got it wrong, and therefore medical science is in conflict with what we're talking about here. Now, that is not true. I remember a woman coming forward for healing shortly before I left Cape Town in our church, where we regularly have healing services. And afterwards, two days later, she said that she had thrown away a certain capsule of pills. And I said to her, but what were they for? And she told me what they were for. And I said, well, you know, I admire your sort of faith, but I think you're being a little silly, because what you actually came forward for healing for is not in contradiction. That healing ministry is not in contradiction with what the doctor is doing. And she actually was very relieved to hear that. That's part of the reason why I think we need to talk some of these things through. These things are not in opposition, and that's very important. God is at work in a whole number of ways to heal. I remember going past a big tent, you know, one of those big revival tents that you sometimes see in Durban, and there was a guy, this was on a Sunday afternoon or something, a guy carrying a whole bunch of crutches into the arena of the tent. And I said, what are those for? He said, oh, those are for the guys tonight. And I went, well, what was that there were going to be a whole lot of guys who were going to be given crutches to hold up onto the stage, you know. Now, there's a lot of, I'm not saying that it's all like that by any means, but there's a lot of that. And very often, in that kind of context, you get a very unbalanced view of things and a knocking down of medical science and so on. The other extreme is an overconfidence in pills and other things. If you talk to some doctors sometimes, you'll know that sometimes they're not quite sure what's going to happen when they give you something, at least the ones that I go to. Maybe they're different in America. We have an overconfidence in pills, and so whenever we're not feeling too well, we run off and take something like a pill just to make us feel better. Now, that's not knocking, as I say, medical science, but it is, I think, saying that we have become more aware, all of us, in our day, that medical science is only one aspect in healing. And there's a whole range of aspects in healing that often medical science just doesn't get hold of. And very often, doctors, in my experience, and this may be totally foreign to your experience, don't spend time with patients working through why they are ill and all kinds of things. And we do rush into all kinds of cures and remedies, which may not always be good for us. So I want us to avoid those two extremes. The next thing I want to say is that I dislike very much the lifting up of one person as a healer. I sort of have an antipathy towards a sort of self-proclaimed or proclaimed by others as a healer. The healer is Jesus Christ. Okay, that's very important. The healer is Jesus Christ, and it seems to me that when the healing ministry is exercised in the life of the church, in the context, I believe, of worship is the right context, that we don't see the person who's laying on hands, or preferably the two or three people who are laying on hands, as the healers. Jesus Christ is the healer. Okay? But just as he uses people to share his love with others and to minister to others in a whole range of ways, so he does use people, and there is such a thing as the gift of healing. Paul refers to it as one of the gifts of the Spirit in his letter to the Corinthians, his first letter, as you know. So there are people who have a particular gift of healing. And that is something we also need to recognize. And if if my understanding of the church is correct, then it often is the case that in every congregation, you may well find someone with that gift. It needn't be the pastor or an official, but someone who has a gift of healing, who needs to be discovered and needs to be enabled to exercise that ministry within the life of that church. Because one of the things I think is important in talking about the healing ministry of the church is to say it is the healing ministry of Christ through the body. Through the body of Christ, through the community. Christ has given gifts to the church. He has given all the gifts that are needed for building up that body and enabling it to function and to be his body in the world in terms of witness and everything else that it needs to be. And so I believe that one, as a church, as a local congregation comes alive, very often one discovers that there are all kinds of gifts there that are waiting to be used. And one of them very often is the gift of healing. In our congregation, as I say, we have in recent times had a ministry of healing in that way. We are not sure who has the gift of healing in our congregation, but healing does take place. And I think that's the very important thing. You want to turn it over? Not yet. Okay. Now, let me just come back to and make three comments and then let's open it up. I want to stress the fact of healing in all its dimensions. I do believe that people can be physically healed. I believe that Christian healing certainly includes physical healing. And there are innumerable accounts of, I think, genuine healing, physical healings of people. One of the books that you may be interested in reading on this is by Francis McNutt. What's it called again? Just healing. Yes, and there are many others, some good and some not so good, but McNutt's books are generally very helpful. There is physical healing, and it does happen. There is also what is called inner healing, and that is the healing of people in terms of their an overwhelming sense of guilt about something, emotional difficulties, even attitudes towards other people. A person I know very well who's a pastor lived for 20 years with a negative attitude towards his father that it was crippling his life and his relationships and his ministry. Until finally he discovered that healing included healing that kind of inner attitude. He participated in a healing service and that transformed that kind of burden that he'd been carrying with him for a very long time. Another thing which people need to consider in terms of healing ministry is the healing of memories. You know, many of our memories are unhelpful and destructive. And somehow we need to bring our memories into consciousness and have a look at them and say, hey, some of those memories aren't helping us to live life fully and to enjoy the feast of life. And we need to somehow ask God to take hold of those memories and to transform them into experiences that are not harmful to us but helpful in our growth. Now, all of this, I believe, is part of the ministry of healing. And we've had people come forward in healing services who have, in response to that comment, have said, gee, you know, for the first time I've realized that part of the reason why I'm living as a cripple, not a physical cripple, but as a cripple, is that I've never been able to forgive my mother, or something of that sort. And that's a very powerful thing. And it can have physical ramifications. As I mentioned earlier, this whole psychosomatic thing. It could just be a twitch, you know, or something. It's amazing how these things are all interconnected. And another area of healing is relationships. We've had people in a healing service come forward and say to us, you know, we're going through a very bad time with our marriage, and it looks as though we're on the rocks. We don't want that to happen. We want the healing of our relationship. Now, when we talk about healing ministry, we are talking about all of that. The physical, certainly, and I don't want to underplay that. The inner healing, the healing of memories, dealing with emotions and attitudes and a whole bunch of other things that we all know and all experience, and the healing of relationships. Now, in the service of healing, there is the laying on of hands. Why do we do that? Well, it's sometimes very difficult for people who've been brought up in the Anglo-Saxon, Norwegian, Scandinavian, Danish traditions to touch anybody. If anybody lays their hands on us, it means something else to anything healing. We find that very difficult. And we also are a little put off by the sort of touchy-feely things that have been going on in American civilization for the last 15 years, you know, touchy-feely kind of things. So we've got two kind of built-in resistances, this traditional one and this new one. The laying on of hands is a form of ministry that runs throughout the Bible. It's one of tremendous symbolic power, significance. What is it? It is somehow communicating the love, the grace, the forgiveness, the healing power of God. It is somehow representing a channel of God's healing power. You don't have to have laying on of hands and so on, but it is a very helpful symbol, and I don't think we should be scared of symbols. We must realize the power, the meaning of symbols, and use them properly. But it is also a ministry of the body. You see, it's not that the minister, ordained minister, is laying on hands, but that whole congregation is laying on hands. Okay? Sometimes in an ordination service, the person being ordained to the ministry may have three or four pairs of hands laid on, but there'll be many other presbyters around who will stretch out their hands. And it's the same thing at the end of a service of worship when the hands are held up, okay, in blessing. You can't lay your hands on every member of your congregation, though you might like to in some ways. But when you lift up your hands in blessing, you are in fact laying your hands on that whole congregation. You are somehow trying to put everybody in the embrace of God's reaching out and touching us. And it's not the minister who is blessing, of course. He is an instrument, or she is an instrument of the blessing and benediction of God. Another part of this is putting the healing within a Eucharistic context, because that reminds us that this is not something extraneous in the life of the church, but it arises out of the self-giving of Jesus Christ on the cross and his risen power in the midst of the congregation, where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. And so on. It is Jesus is the healer, and we are powerfully reminded in the Eucharist of the healing power of Christ's broken body for us, and the power of his resurrection. Well, now, that's all I'm going to say in opening it up for a little discussion. Perhaps I've said more than I should have, but I want to just comment on one last thing. And this is a question that is often asked. Hey, say I come up for healing, and you lay your hands on me, and I really believe that I'm going to be healed of that ulcer, whatever it might be, and nothing happens. What then? handle that. Now, as I said right at the beginning, and I come back to that, the healing ministry of the church is God's prerogative. We do not control God. It's God in his freedom and grace and love who heals or who doesn't in the way that we may want him to on occasions. I believe that at the heart of the healing ministry is being surprised by God's grace. And I've had people say this to me. We came forward to be healed of some physical thing, and we were not. But you know, from that day on, we not only were able to cope with our illness, whatever it may be, in a new way, but we were able to minister to other people who were ill, and we'd never been able to do that before. Now, that I believe is as much the healing ministry of God through the church as if that person had been physically healed. I think that we must be constantly aware that God works in surprising ways, and it is not a case of nothing happening. It's sometimes a case of things happening that we hadn't anticipated. And that is very important. So maybe we want to keep that in mind. Maybe we want to talk a little bit more about that. Okay. Perhaps some questions. Perhaps somebody disagrees with something.
Do you use anointing with oil in your
I have... I don't know if there's any around here, but yeah, sure. It's again a very powerful symbol and very important.
We had a healing service in my church, and they used the anointing.
Sure, that is they talk about oil as a healing symbol in the New Testament, as you know. Incidentally, has anybody here exercised a gift of healing? You should have been doing the talking, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, would you like to comment on anything I said?
No, I feel exactly the way you do. In fact, I kind of put my tongue in my cheek if I ever talk about it.
Yeah, right.
It just,
yeah.
In fact, it was kind of humorous. And I walked out of the room because it was a case of a man having a severe heart attack.
Yeah.
And kind of convulsive hiccups.
Yeah.
You know, and he was deteriorating to the point where they said maybe hours.
Yeah.
And prayed for his healing, and in the midst of the prayer, he stopped, and he had been hiccuping for, I don't know, over a day.
Yeah.
And I kept praying. I was aware of it, and I thought, oh, maybe it's suggestive power. And I thought, well, I just better, keep going on here. But I said amen eventually, and I walked out of the room.
Yeah.
I came back a day or two later, and then he talked about it.
Sure.
And he knew what was going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you said that some people have the power of healing, you mean
they don't have the power of healing.
The what?
They have the gift of healing.
Oh, the gift of healing. Do you mean they have it permanently, or is it something that comes and goes?
Not necessarily permanently. They might not. It's a gift. It's not theirs.
Yes.
It's a gift.
But it isn't something that they can go and say, I've got this, and like you said, in that sense, zap.
Yeah, I'm unhappy when that is said, quite frankly.
Yes.
Yeah. But others would disagree with me, I think.
Would you say then God is the time chooser?
Yeah.
Not me.
Yeah, you see, everything has its time, and we need to somehow get into the rhythm of God's action, and to understand that what we're talking about here again is not a mechanical thing with formula that if we follow them, then it follows that so and so will happen, but somehow that we're sensitive to the fact that God is alive and active, and that He has a time and a way with each person. We're not quite always sure what that is. But, if I can share another story. When we first started this healing ministry in our congregation, And we did it with a great deal of fear and trepidation. I mean, you know, ordinary middle class congregation like I suppose many that you'd be familiar with don't go in for this kind of thing. And we invited people to come forward during the communion service for healing. We were just amazed at the number of people who came forward and for whom this was right. And the number of people who said to us afterwards, you know, we just, why didn't you ever do this before? You know, we've been really needing this. The time has been right for us, but there's never been an opportunity. And they've had to go somewhere else, you see, and sometimes it's not been a healthy thing to do that. So I think what I'm saying in response to your question is that yes, there is a time, but sometimes we miss that opportunity and time because we don't provide a ministry of healing. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a question too, and I wondered, I've heard many people talk about healing, having experience being the tool in a healing situation. And then I've never asked anyone else this, when the woman was healed of the issue of blood, and Jesus said, "Who touched me?" And the disciples said, "How can you tell?" He said, "I felt power draw out from me." All right, now you too have declared that you have experienced being that tool. Mm-hmm. Now I'm wondering, did you also have this feeling of power through you?
Yeah, sometimes, yes, you have a strange sensation sometimes. No, I wouldn't try to explain that. You also feel very emotionally drained at the end. You really do. But then you also do when you've been preaching. The two things are not disconnected. I don't know. Would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, I like what you said in terms of surprise, and then when you know, anytime you feel that, no matter what you feel, something strange going on, or you know, the power of God, in a very dramatic kind of way, being felt there, that, you know, that's different. Anytime you feel that, whether it's healing or any other kind of experience, but I don't identify with power drained.
Yeah, I just wondered, you know, about if there was a.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Oh yeah.
When you talk about, say, healing from memories or emotional problems, things like that, I guess I have a little trouble saying, let's say I had something like that. I know God has worked in my life in so many ways that over time I have been healed.
Sure.
I mean, I've been healed of things very, very definitely and very much, you know, knowing it was God. But I can't quite identify with the idea of saying, well, I have this really stuck place in my life and I'm going to go to a healing service tonight and I'm going to ask that be unstuck.
Sure.
Is it to ask that it be unstuck immediately or that the process begin or what? Because to me, that isn't necessary. If I'm praying for my problem and praying that God will work, or if a friend of mine has a problem and I'm working with them and praying for them, what's the distinction between that kind of ongoing thing and healing?
Well, what you're describing.
Can I respond to that?
Yeah, sure, please.
I was at a place like that. I was feeling a lot of rejection from my mother, and I was prayed for that. And that rejection has gone. There's no animosity between my mother and I. I just feel love for her now. And it's very hard to explain and to have somebody else understand it. But when you've been there and you've received that healing, you know in your heart that it's from Jesus. And that
was
right there.
Thing though, or just a process in the course of continuing prayer?
No, it was in that prayer right then.
Yeah, I think this is right, but it happens in both ways. You see, the healing process within the life of the church is happening all the time, and every act of worship and life within the body should be a healing experience. And yet there come occasions when some kind of breakthrough in terms of something may be required. It may not take place in a healing service, but it may be in something else. Just to give you an example, I went to preach one day in one of our congregations, and unbeknown to me, there was a father and a daughter in that congregation who hadn't spoken to each other for about, I don't know whether it was 6 months now, or 2 years or something. And during the course of the communion, we shared the peace with one another. It was the first time in that congregation that they'd ever done actual sharing of the peace. In the midst of that, because the congregation got up and moved around, and suddenly father was sitting at the back and daughter was sitting somewhere else, came face to face and had to say peace to each other. Now, they hadn't said anything to each other, you see, for 6 months or whatever it was. But in that context of Eucharistic worship, they had to say the peace of the Lord be with you, and they embraced each other, and there was a breakthrough. I think we're talking about something similar to that. There comes that moment when, within the context of worship, something can happen that is a kind of qualitative leap. But it doesn't necessarily happen like that at all. It can be a slow process of growth and so on, and both are the healing ministry of the body. Does that make sense to you? Yeah. Yeah.
Do the people who come forward in a healing service, are they always people who would like to be healed themselves, or do they come forward in behalf of somebody else?
It can be both. I've often had people come forward who say that my sister in England is not well. Would you pray with me for her healing? And tonight in the service, we will have a time of intercession. And I hope that those of you who participate there and who know of people who have needs will feel free to mention their names. Because I certainly don't want to see healing as a sort of a selfish thing that we're going to get healed. But we are concerned about the healing of others as well in this context. So, yes, by all means. Yeah. Oh, we've had people coming forward who said, I got one hell of a week ahead of me. You know, I just need some help. And I felt that this would be helpful. That's okay, you know. We've also had people who've come forward and said, I've got cancer. This is why I want to stress that we're talking about the wholeness of God's work. And there's nothing, there's no sort of area that is excluded from him reaching out and touching.
Can I ask how you incorporate this into your worship? Do I assume that you do this in your morning worship? Or is it a special service?
Well, thus far I've done it mainly in an evening service, and not all that often. Okay, don't get the idea that I'm sort of a practitioner of this.
It's
a great experience. I've participated in this regularly in missions that I've been involved in conducting over the last few years, both in small worship services early in the morning and in big services in the church and so on. Just before I came away, we had a big healing service in our church in the evening. We have evening worship as well as morning. Somehow that seems to be more conducive to this kind of ministry. We also have had it on other occasions in other kind of contexts of worship. Is that answering your question?
Well, I guess what I'm asking is if the pastor or the congregation was interested in having healing worship services, would that be, you know, like a few times a year?
Yeah, I would say that what I would like to do if I was pastor of a church, and I'm not, I would say that every, say, month or two, there would be a stated healing service. But I would also provide opportunities on other occasions, maybe in the context of communion, And when people come up and stand around our table, communion table, which we do in the evening service, if a person had a say, and I would indicate that this is possible, could you pray with me? Then while other people have gone back to their seats, that person or somebody else would just stay there and we'd have prayers with that person. And that's more or less how we're going to do tonight, incidentally. In the act of actual communion, people who would like prayer, either for themselves or somebody else, laying on of hands, just to stay around the table, around the altar. And that's where the ministry will take place. And we feel that that's the right place, the right point. Okay? How does that sound to you?
Where will the service be tonight?
Where will it be? We've scheduled it for Koinonia. We weren't sure whether to have it here or there. Does anybody have any strong feelings about that?
Why not in the village center where they have the altar?
The regular worship.
Should we do it there?
This was really scheduled more as one of the late night services.
Yeah.
That are 10:15 and they're almost always in Koinonia. Yeah. It's probably why it got scheduled there. I would think that the group would be kind of small.
Yeah.
I think
Koinonia
would be more intimate too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have
them
here.
Yeah?
Koinonia.
In Koinonia. Yeah. That's where it's scheduled. Yeah. Next door, yeah.
The fireplace rings.
Yeah, right.
How do you discover who the healers are?
Gosh, they should have discovered themselves. You see, when you start talking in a church about the fact that people, the gifts in this congregation, and gee, who's got what, and they sort of appear. You know? One guy even said to us once, we're quite desperate in our church council looking for somebody to convene our church fair. And one morning, after a prayer meeting that we have in our church, the guy who was sharing in that came up to us. He didn't know about our sort of worry about this sort of minor thing in the life of our church, which is a very big thing for many people. And he said, I feel I'm called to be a faith convener. All right, you've got the gift of convening the faith, and if that's your gift, fine, we're very happy for you to have that. What I'm saying is that very often they identify themselves, but they only do that if there's an encouragement in the life of the church for people to discover the gifts that they've had, and an opportunity for them to use those gifts. Because if the pastor or a few other people in the church claim to have all the gifts and to be the ministry in the church, then of course nobody else is going to discover what they're there as spectators or something else. Does that make sense to you? Maybe somebody else has got some other comment on that one.
Well, how do you follow through then when you do discover these people that have the gifts? Do you connect them with people that want healing?
Oh, no. Well, then what you would do, you would incorporate them in your ministry of healing within the worship service.
Oh.
Yeah, they would be part of the group who would lay hands on people.
Okay.
Sure.
This can also often happen, I think, in smaller groups within the church. You know, because we also have what we call house churches, which are smaller fellowship groups. And this sometimes happens within those groups as well, where in the community, the caring, community of caring.
Yeah. And thank you for raising that, because one of the very important things in healing ministry is the support of the community for people who have been helped in this way. Just as in every other aspect of helping people, they shouldn't just be left now to be on their own, but they really do need to be surrounded by people who care for them and help them. And it's, I think, important for people who have been helped somehow to be integrated into the caring ministry of the church more meaningfully.
Does the healing have to take time in the context of the church, or can it be outside the church?
No, I think that I would say God's surprises are sometimes very surprising. Certainly one wouldn't want to say it can only take place in this way or in this place or anything of that sort. What I am saying is that it seldom is allowed to happen where it should be happening. You see? we can let God work these things wherever he wants to. But he's asking us to allow him to do his thing in our midst, and we just don't allow him the opportunity to do his thing in our midst. I think that's what I'm saying.
How do we overcome this? I think of Lutherans, and I think of when they hear laying on hands, I think they go, ugh. You know, like maybe Pentecostal.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, it's the same with Calvinists. They go, they don't only go, they go, ah! Okay, well, I don't quite know how you did, except that Lutherans have a great respect for the Word, and in the Word there are a couple of bits about healing and laying on of hands and calling in the elders and a few other bits and pieces. So I guess out of respect for the Word, they might... Yeah.
Well, I would say that if a pastor sees a core of people who are interested
I'm sure.
I suggest it. Go talk to a pastor.
I think there are lots of pastors in all the churches who probably would like to do this, but are not sure how their congregation would take it. You know, it's the other way around. So in one congregation, you may have a pastor who really wants to do it, and a bunch of the congregation who want to do it, but they have never come into contact. And somehow, if one side doesn't make the approach, it will never happen.
I think all of this, too, is part of a sort of wider thing of a wider ministry in the church. And sometimes it doesn't happen easily. I mean, you know, we're talking about our church, so it would be nice, but in fact it hasn't. And, you know, about 7 or 8 years ago, it went through a very, very dry patch, and we thought, you know, this whole place is falling apart, nothing's happening here. But it takes a commitment, I think, in terms of prayer and your own commitment and waiting for God to do something. Sometimes there is a period of waiting, but one has to just keep faith. And then God sends people, you know, who come and often, and in surprising ways it grows if we're faithful. And if we keep, you know, I think, at it in prayer and in our commitment and patience.
Yeah. Okay, well...
There's a question back there. So I was just going to point out to her the notion or the concept of laying on of hands isn't that foreign in the Lutheran Church. Mm-hmm. Pastors are all ordained mm-hmm. in that manner, and many have children come to communion which are blessed in that manner. And there's a very large teaching ministry in the Lutheran Church, and teachers many times are installed with the laying on of hands. Mm-hmm. So it's there if we just expand it a little bit. It isn't that foreign.
Okay. Let me, in conclusion, I think we've gone over time. It's now just after 10 to 7. Let me just make a couple of comments about the service. There are going to be four parts of the service, just so that you know exactly what's going to happen. The first part, after a little introduction, will be focusing on the forgiveness of sins. And there'll be a time of quietness at that particular point. Because it's very important, we believe, that we accept God's acceptance of us and his forgiveness of us as a prelude to any kind of healing taking place in any sense in the life of the church and in relationships and anything else. The second thing will be reflecting just for a short while on one of the healing stories in the gospel. And the point of that is to somehow try and reflect on the presence of Jesus in our midst as healer. And then there'll be a time of silence to reflect on that. There won't be a sermon or anything. Then there'll be a time of intercession for other people, a time of free prayer where we can mention by name people who we are concerned about. And there we need some telegraph prayers, not lengthy orations to God, but just mentioning names of people that we'd like to pray for. And then we have the communion, and those who communicate and who wish to have the laying on of hands, as I've indicated, should somehow come towards the end of the group that may come up. You never quite know how it's going to work out practically, but it will be around the table, and all that you need to do is to indicate that you have a particular concern, and quietly mention it to me or to Maynard or to my wife, who will be sharing in this, and we'll lay our hands on and pray. And it won't be one of those prayers that goes on for a long time, and we won't be trying to get devils out of you, and we won't be sort of, you know, somehow trying to force something to happen. It's simply a very simple prayer for God's healing in the particular area that you're concerned about. Because it's not what we're going to do that's going to do the healing. It's God surprising you. And that's how it is. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing in this. And,
thank you.
I thought of another question that's her.